morning and welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. My guests are Judy Hyman and Jeff Klaus. Hyman and Klaus are founding members of the folk roots alternative rock band The Horseflies. The Horseflies have recorded 7 albums and have been featured on many national stages, including MTV, Prairie Home Companion, and World Cafe. Hyman and Klaus also compose and record music for feature films, documentaries, and TV. Welcome to the show, to you both.
Thanks.
Hello,
nice
thank
to
you.
Be here.
Now, I want to talk about musical beginnings, and let's start with you, Judy. Your early roots are classical and so on. Did you start as a child?
I did. I started playing violin when I was about 8 years old, and I preceded that with a year of piano and kept both up through high school and beyond. Uh-huh. And I am the only one in that band, I think, although no, Taki, I think, has classical background. I think I'm the only one that went to music school.
Oh, really?
In that band.
Uh-huh. And so you started on your own? This was a passion? Or were you pushed into it by your family?
Oh, I come from a musical family, mm-hmm. and I wouldn't say it was pushing. It was just an expectation, just the thing you do. You turn 7 or so, and you start piano.
And it took, though. You didn't run away from it as an adult. How about you, Jeff?
Oh, small town in the Midwest. I started with church choir and piano lessons and 4-string acoustic guitar, you know, a tenor guitar, playing folk stuff and a little bit of Bob Dylan, I think, and some protest kind of songs uh-huh. in the 60s, late 60s, and that kind of thing.
Uh-huh. And how did the two of you meet? How did your paths cross?
Well, it was a kind of a great convergence for me. I met Jeff the same weekend that I basically encountered fiddle music. We both went to a festival called Union Grove that was in North Carolina.
It was sort of love at about fourth sight, I think, spending a weekend together. Somebody who a friend and I had been playing music with brought Judy along. We were all camping out in a shared open space. I remember getting up one morning, and we had eaten all sorts of sort of typical cooked over the fire kind of stuff,
the
including
burnt stuff.
Yeah, right, exactly. Sort of an old pot of beans was left there, kind of congealed on the top. And I got up in the morning, and she was eating out of this cold pot of stuff, you know. And I thought, there's somebody I can relate to. This might work.
So it wasn't music that brought you together, though, that first time, right?
Well, it was a musical trip,
okay.
So we were both there.
I see. So yeah,
it was a
fiddle
music,
right?
Oh, okay.
I had only encountered fiddle music shortly before that, maybe about a year before, and so was really interested in the whole kind of subculture of old-time fiddle music,
uh-huh.
not bluegrass stuff, but the old-time stuff, and had been to that festival the year before and then went with some people, you know, to other events, and this one was included in the list. And
wow, that's yeah. incredible. So the Horseflies began in 1981, right?
Around then, yeah.
Well, to tell us how that happened, what was your original vision? Was it going to be folk roots and alternative rock, or talk to us about it.
Well, we moved to Ithaca in 1979, and we knew a lot of people from around here because we went to lots of these kinds of festivals that we just referred to, and you meet this community of people who play old-time music. And so when we came here, we had a band where we were before in Bloomington, Indiana, and we knew we wanted to do that again. And we got together with a bunch of friends and started playing things like Apple Festivals and the like. And eventually that lineup ended up being Richie Stearns and Jeff and me and our friend John Hayward.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And did you start writing music? Did you decide that you were going to have a flavor for this band and write your own music?
No, and I would say there wasn't a vision, and it's never been a conscious decision to do X, Y, or Z. I mean, I think sometimes your aesthetic police, which is someplace in there in the back of your brain, may reject certain things that you end up doing, and you say, well, I don't want to do that because it doesn't feel right. But we were at that point very early on just wanting to play traditional fiddle music in a way that felt right to us. And what that meant for us is that we really liked a lot of rhythm, and we liked the drone and kind of the repetition of that music. So we were drawn to elements of the music, not so much as historians in some way trying to recreate, but just as people who happen to love this particular kind of music in that moment. And then out of that grew explorations of other things, because all of us had other musical interests and just kind of experiences in our background mm-hmm. that then generated different paths, but I wouldn't say it was ever really sort of conscious that, oh, let's do this. Never a marketing decision, right?
Yeah.
I'd also say that for me, my attraction to the traditional music was really the fiddle tunes and not so much the songs. And so when we started to try to figure out where it would be fun to play, and we started to try to play in places where the expectation was that you would do something more than just play fiddle tunes all night long, then we started to just go in that direction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, related to that, I think at that point the tradition was that if you were one of these bands doing this kind of music, you played festivals or folk clubs or dances. And because we so much liked the rhythm and kind of the drive and energy of the music, and because of our own experiences with other kinds of music, we saw it as appropriate to do this stuff in rock clubs, although it wasn't rock.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
What that meant is that we were thinking of other places to do it just because we enjoyed performing it.
Mm-hmm. I want to listen to a cut from your CD, Gravity Dance. This is a song called Needles on a Beach. Tell us a little about it before we listen.
Well, it's a topical song, pretty obvious from the title, I suppose, and then the content of the lyric. And we aren't always topical or political. We're looking for a number of things, I think, intuitively in our music that ultimately I think we want the music to have some kind of meaning and emotional impact for us. Now, sometimes that's political, but sometimes it's at that human level. Sometimes it's humor that drives it.
I was just going to say, some of your stuff is very humorous.
Uh-huh. So, you know, I think we like sort of dark humor to some degree, or sometimes almost a slapstick lyric or turning something around. And when this song was written, a lot was in the news about, you know, medical waste washing up on the beach, and so we sort of played with that.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's listen to a little bit of it. Great. Now, you do sound like Neil Young. Is that conscious?
Well, it's not conscious, but I have to say I did listen to a lot of Neil Young in my formative period when I was really learning to play acoustic guitar. I listened to a lot of his stuff and in the early days did play some of his songs, so I'm sure that in that sense it's sort of conscious/subconscious. It's definitely in there. You know, I guess my voice may just sort of gravitate to some of that. I have a thinner voice as opposed to a richer voice, and so there's certain parts of what he does that I've always loved. Mm-hmm. I find his music to have real emotional kind of connection.
Uh-huh. So. And he's still producing it. It's amazing
the stuff he's
still doing. Now, I want to ask you both this. The band has been together for over 20 years. Is this a good place for individual musicians to grow, to be in a band for this long a period of time?
Well, I think I wouldn't be out of bounds, so to speak, by saying that I don't think that one can have a band go on this long without also having individual outlets, because you can't make a band stretch to where each of the people wants or needs their own music to go. So certainly at this point in time, we've all got various kinds of outlets, and the band is still really central and important, but we like to let the band be what it needs to be, and it is what the aggregate of people bring to it.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Jeff?
Well, related to that, I guess I would say that in the arc of this band, you know, we've definitely been through some different incarnations, both in terms of instrumentation, more acoustic versus more electric or whatever it is, as well as some different personnel. And I think one of the things those of us who have been in the band from the beginning have kind of discovered over time is that this band is an outlet for a certain kind of music that we can't really create in other configurations. Now, I think there were times in the earlier stages of the band where we all sort of really wanted it to be some kind of expression of what it was that we as individuals were thinking about, and you do run up against sort of tensions and conflict. This band has not been full of that kind of stuff, but mm-hmm. but you get this sense that, well, maybe this piece of music that I'm bringing to the band doesn't really work with this configuration. So there were moments many years ago now, I think, where some of us experienced some of that in this configuration, but I feel like one of the aspects of kind of, in quotation marks, maturity that's come for us in this band that's really, really rewarding for a lot of us is that when we weren't at a period doing this band, primarily because John Hayward had died, and that really mm-hmm. was just tragic for us, you know, really hard. Sorry.
It still is.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, it's still very hard.
Yeah, always will be.
At that point, we didn't play. It sort of took the wind out of our sails emotionally, and it just couldn't do it. And then there became a period where I think we all realized that there was a thing that existed in this particular configuration that was really satisfying that we couldn't get any other way. Mm-hmm. And so it, in some sense, brought us back together.
Mm-hmm. Now, you guys have had a national presence as well. You've been on MTV and Prairie Home Companion. Do you still consider yourselves a local band?
I guess when we're at home, we're a local band. Or as I like
but
to say...
Is your music informed by this
oh,
place
yeah.
where you live?
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, very much. It's informed by lots of things, but I'll give you a perfect example. We made Gravity Dance, you know, the album you played the cut from before, in Los Angeles with a major label, with MCA, and they had sort of made the arrangements that we would do it with this producer, and he had this studio in L.A., and so we ended up out in L.A. during the summer trying to make art, and people who live in this climate, in this environment, sort of look at that and see people coming to work in shorts and fresh white, you know, like running
shoes
and go,
yeah.
What the hell is this? It's like, I don't know if this fits our sensibility aesthetically. So, yeah, I mean, I think our music is very informed by the region. The other thing is that the kind of fiddle music that we've gravitated to is very informed by sort of a history of other people who've played fiddle music in this area. There are regional differences, and this area has produced a kind of regional thing to some degree that's different from other places in terms of the fiddle music. I mean, Judy might want
to
talk about that.
I like to talk about the geography of music. I mean, you do hear different kinds of music coming out of different regions of the country. And within the fiddle music world, you definitely hear, even when people think they're doing something like us, think they're doing something that's sort of southern, it ends up being informed by other places. For example, when I was newish to the music, I saw some French-Canadian music, because we're not that far away from where that happens, mm-hmm. and that kind of informed things. The other thing is that I think that there's been a lot of experimenting with the music in this area. I think that's part of what people have done here that's interesting and that they have in common. It doesn't always come out sounding the same, but it's kind of that same attraction to being able to take a music and love that music, but then make it your own and do things with it.
Mm-hmm. If you're just joining us, my guests are Judy Hyman and Jeff Klaus. They're founding members of The Horseflies. I want to talk to you about this. The Horseflies have been incredibly successful. So what was the deal with this offshoot called Boy with a Fish?
Oh, that's just another vehicle for expressing ourselves musically. And as Judy was saying before, we all have them. You know, if you look at what all of us in this band do in terms of other bands and other experiences, it's a pretty long list. Everybody has other sort of connections and interests. And especially at the point when the Horseflies got reconfigured to move on, there was a point there where we did actually make a conscious decision as a group to not continue to pursue the more electric kind of approach that we'd been engaged in the MCA kind of period there. And at that point, we were doing electric guitars, and Judy mm-hmm. was playing electric violin, and we had a drum kit and that kind of thing. And we decided that we wanted to go back to something that would be, for us, kind of a pumped up and big acoustic sound. So while we play acoustic instruments mostly, they're plugged in and sometimes processed. But we went back to our drummer playing hand percussion. He's a really great hand percussionist. And so we kind of went a little bit more, I'd call it loosely an acoustic kind of direction, although mm-hmm. it's still the Horseflies. Mm-hmm. And at that point, it made a lot of sense, given an interest for me, especially, and Judy too, in playing some electric, more rock and roll kind of mm-hmm. stuff.
Yeah, I want to play a cut from the CD called Birds Fly Backwards, and the cut is called Out Into the Empty. Do you want to tell us a little about it before we listen to it?
Well, it's kind of our folkier side, I guess. I mean, the band actually is you know, sort of more aggressively a rock band than this cut. I really like this cut in that in the instrumentation you hear the accordion and the kind of reedy Americana feel. It's kind of a simple song in terms of harmonic stuff. And, you know, there's some family stuff in there.
Let's listen to it. So how do you change from Jeff Klaus writing for the Horseflies and then writing for Boy with a Fish? Is this like Stephen King and Richard Bachman? Or
I wish.
Like Noam Bloom?
I'm actually going to jump in on this one because you're sort of making an assumption that Jeff writes for the bands.
Oh.
And actually, mm-hmm. the way we create music in the Horseflies can be any number of different ways, even if Jeff ends up creating a lyric and a vocal on top, or if Richie ends up creating a lyric and a vocal on top. And more, actually, these days in Boy with a Fish, the same thing. We work things out. One person will come to the group with an idea. If it's not Jeff, it'll be an instrumental idea.
Uh-huh.
And then we sort of work that out and, as a group, figure out where we're going and feel our way through it. And frequently, these days, the vocal goes on last.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I think for me, it always has. It's really interesting. You know, lots of people write lyrics and then create the music, and I think real songwriters do it more like that, although, you know, it varies on who you are. We have this process with both bands that we sort of call mining for nuggets, and we get in a room with even, you know, three people or some configuration that isn't the whole band, and will create a, you know, just a piece of a larger idea. It might be two chords and some sort of a pattern. We look for things that are immediately attractive and feel right to all of us, and then out of that might grow a song.
Oh, that's very interesting.
You know, so I know Richie Stearns, you know, the other really primary songwriter in the Horseflies, does the same thing. We sort of keep lyrics floating around, and I think sometimes Richie may write more lyrics before music, but it often goes this other way too. But you have lyric ideas around, and then somehow they seem, some piece of a lyric idea may fit with a musical idea, and then it starts to define where a song might want to go.
Mm-hmm. Is that your process as well?
Well, you know, I have always said I'm lyric blind. So
really?
I have no part in the lyrics, mm-hmm. and in fact, I find it very difficult to sing lyrics. So when I do sing, usually, occasionally I'll sing back up on a chorus, and that'll have some lyrics in it. But usually these days when I'm singing, actually, I'm just using my voice as an instrument, and I often double it with the violin. So as far as that whole creative process goes, really we do kind of work on subsets of the group, because otherwise it can be a little bit chaotic with having everybody do it all at once. And we'll have some subset come up with a nugget, and then we'll let it take its shape as other people come to the table.
Mm-hmm. I want to play one more cut from Gravity Dance. This one's called Sally Ann. Can you tell us a little about it before we play it?
Yeah.
This is the Horseflies.
Yeah, right. And well, this song does have traditional roots. There is a traditional instrumental that's called Sally Ann, and this isn't—it's loosely related to a very odd version of that comes by way of an older band from Tennessee called the Birchfields, and it's for me it's unrecognizable as the song we typically know as the fiddle tune Sally Ann, the way they used to do it, and they tune their instruments differently and all kinds of things, and we heard someone play that and then kind of took off from there and ended up slowing it down and changing the chords a little bit. And we actually got that from a guy named Dirk Powell, who's done a lot of really interesting work out there and a great musician. And, you know, and then I wrote some lyrics, and it's very topical, and created a, you know, chorus, and Judy and I wrote a bridge. So it became a song as opposed to this fiddle tune, and it had sort of unusual origins.
Let's listen to it. Great. But before we run out of time, I do want to talk about the fact that you both have segued into composing music for film and television and multimedia. Tell us how you got into that.
Well, the first film that we did as a band, and we were approached by Jay Craven, who's a producer-director who lives in northern Vermont, who knew the band because he had produced a live show that we opened for of Johnny Clegg. So the Horseflies opened for Johnny Clegg. Jay Craven had this movie going, and he got interested in doing that with us. And that was the very first one. Mm-hmm. Jay has now done 4 feature films with us, and the second one we also did as a band. And then the third and fourth ones we have ended up doing the two of us. And so that has sort of led into all sorts of other things, mm-hmm. the documentaries.
And what's that experience like for you in comparison to the bands?
You mean creating music for film?
Creating music for film,
well,
yeah.
For me, it's really exciting. First of all, you don't have to write any lyrics usually.
Judy's the one that should have been saying that.
Right, and you don't have to record vocals, which is also challenging sometimes. But, you know, the whole purpose of music and film is to create an emotional atmosphere to support what's going on in the film. So there's this whole, for me, really exciting process of working with directors to find the right emotional note, if you will, mm-hmm. For each scene to support what they're trying to accomplish in the film. So especially with Jay Craven, we have these great conversations about what he's, you know, trying to accomplish. And they're not about what kind of music he wants. They're about sort of the poetry of the scene and where he's going.
So you guys get to see the scenes
thousands
of times.
So he doesn't just describe, I want this.
No, they send you a film.
That brings us to there's a side of it that I like beyond the emotional. I actually really like technology. And so I'm very, very attracted to the side of this that is actually making it happen and getting it all locked up. And that's another whole element to it.
And there's sometimes when that's really quite a feat. I mean, you know, there is a lot of technical stuff to make this work in the right way and to be able to produce it in a way that will work for them once they have the music. So it really matches. And sometimes directors will be really clear about wanting what's called in the film business a hit, meaning that a certain musical element will coincide with a certain visual element. Mm-hmm. And to do that, you really have to be locked up using computers.
And do you have as much,
at least these days.
Do you have as much creative freedom? When you're working for a director?
It depends upon the director.
Oh, yeah.
With Jay, we have a lot of freedom, and almost everything ends up getting approved, even if it ends up being adjusted somewhat. We have worked for, and I have worked for, other people who are equally as easy, and we've also worked for people who have something so specific in mind that you end up throwing a lot of things out there to try to figure out what it is, and then matching their, almost like mind reading, trying to figure out what it is they want. One of the things that I've noticed, and I guess any filmmaker who's listening to this will chuckle about it, but filmmakers who know a lot about music often do their own music.
Yeah.
So the filmmakers who end up contracting with musicians don't know music and don't have language for it. And so a major part of it, the way I see it, is communicating and also being ready and willing to try things over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm. So is it somewhat of a tedious process?
Parts of it can be tedious. Mm-hmm. Parts of it are thrilling. It's all over the map. There's certainly parts of it that are that come down to the technology, and some of that is tedious, and some of that, for me, is exciting because, you know, if you can get it to work, it's a great thing.
You don't have to use lyrics. It's wonderful.
Yeah. There's sort of a discovery process there that's really exciting. Yeah.
I also have always, you know, having a classical background, I've always been very, very interested in instrumental music, and I've always had it in my mind, although I didn't act on it before all of this began, that I would like to compose. And so this has been a tremendous outlet for me.
Oh, that's great. Well, we are almost out of time. I do want to bring up the fact that you are coming out with a new album in 2008, is what I understand. Tell us a little tiny bit about it.
Well, you know, it's a new Horseflies CD, and we've just finished mixing it, and we're excited about it. I don't think I can always easily say that about the music I work on. You know, I'm fairly kind of hypercritical about my own involvement and stuff, and I think it represents the band really well, and it represents this combination of the traditional and the modern, and sort of the sweet and spooky with the kind of upbeat driving stuff. So I think it captures a lot about who we are, and in general, it's been really satisfying, really fun. So we're excited to see it.
And when is it coming out?
It's hard to say exactly because we still have a few steps in the process, but I would imagine it would be out by March.
Mm-hmm. And does it have a title yet?
No.
It doesn't,
actually.
It's that new. Okay.
Yeah, we're still, we have a few ideas. So.
Well, we have run out of time. We will look forward to this mystery project coming from the Horseflies in the spring.
Yeah.
Thank you both so much for joining me.
Well, thank you
for having us.
Thanks.
Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. We are supported in part by the Arts of the Southern Finger Lakes in Corning, New York. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega. And visit us online at outofboundsradioshow.com. We'll be back next week. I'm Tish Perlman.